Hello, 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 everyone. You're now tuned into Unorthodox Rel, and I'm your host, Relicious. And today I'm here with another guest. Diamond, please introduce yourself.
Hello, everyone. My name is Diamond Spratling, and I am super excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast today.
Thank you so much, Diamond. You guys are going to learn more about her towards the meat of the podcast. But first, we're going to do rapid fire questions. So the first question I have for you is, what is one thing you would put on your bucket list right now?
Ooh, okay. I would travel the whole world. I wish post-COVID.
Yeah. Did you have a place that you were supposed to go to this year and then COVID ruined it?
I was supposed to be in Colombia living my best life for my 24th birthday. Yeah, that was destroyed.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. We're all struggling.
Yeah. Are you a morning or a night person?
Morning person. 6:30 in the morning every day.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I'm on it, but I'm in bed soon too. I'm in bed by 10.
Oh, and you actually like fall asleep at 10?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Wow, I'm not I think it like you. I'm a morning person, but the thing is, I still go to bed late.
Like, oh no, you gotta get your 8 hours in.
I need to. What is one thing that annoys you the most?
That's hard to choose. There's a lot. The first thing that came to mind, though, is when people chew with their mouths open. I hate that.
Oh, my God. That has been someone else's who was, I guess, on a podcast. What is your lifelong dream?
Really to travel the world and eat, honestly, but also be able to do some good in the world.
Yeah. What new technology do you think will transform the future?
That's a hard question. New technology. This may not be as like innovative, but I think self-driving cars. So, I mean, when people are going out, you don't got to worry about somebody or, you know, get into drunk driving accidents, things like that.
Yeah, that's a good one. And the last final rapid fire question is, what is your favorite song right now?
Okay. It's a song that just came to my head. It's with 2 Chainz and Lil Wayne, but I can't think of the name of it. So I guess it's not my favorite song if I can't even think of the name of it. Oh my goodness. I don't know why I'm blanking right now, but I love that song. They're like talking about the HBCUs and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I know what song you're talking about.
But... yeah, it has a good beat, but I can't remember the name of it. I'm going to have to get back to you on that one.
So let's get into the podcast. So since the name of my podcast is called Unorthodox Real, I ask every single guest this question. What makes you unorthodox?
Excellent question. So I would say what makes me unorthodox is my strive, my consistency, my drive to put a bunch of things together that in some way most people would think of as unrelated or something that we maybe as a Black community don't really push that much, something and bring all of those things together and get people to care about it in a way that hasn't traditionally been communicated through our communities.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful answer. So let's get into how you got into becoming an environmental justice activist and a social scientist. So let's start like with when you were growing up, did you know that this was something you would have wanted to go into, or this kind of just happened while you were in school?
Yeah. So I love answering this question because my journey was kind of, I always say, just complex and totally unexpected. Mm-hmm. So first of all, I always loved like the environment, like, oh, let's save the trees, let's save the polar bears. Of course, that's what we learned in middle school. Mm-hmm. But then, I learned all about that in high school. I'm like, oh, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to study environmental science, environmental policy. But then I realized I wasn't so good at the science part of it. I didn't really care so much about that part of it, but more so like the advocacy part of it. And so I actually had, it was my second internship in undergrad, where I was working for the West Michigan Environmental Action Council. And so I had an amazing supervisor and mentor, Anne-Marie Hurdle. And she introduced the concept to me. It's this anecdote that she always used that when in our like Black communities, like a lot of times we have incinerators or like coal-fired power plants or something like that that pollutes our neighborhoods. And so imagine those pollutants in our neighborhoods and then a child who has asthma. And we know Black and brown communities, more of our kids have asthma than white communities. And so she was explaining that if a kid has an asthma attack, more than likely, they have to miss a day of school. When you're missing a day of school, that's a missed education day. When you're missing lots of days of school, that's less rate or less chance that you're going to graduate from college. That's less chance that you're going to get a greater job. And when you have to stay home from school as a kid, your parent has to stay home from school, too. So that's less food on the table because you're missing a work day and just all of those different things that trigger just from a missed day of school because you had asthma, because there you have poor pollution in your neighborhood. So that anecdote really, really stuck to me just learning that my second year of undergrad. So that's when I was like, okay, I want to connect these environmental issues to issues that impact our social environment, our physical environment, our health, us, like racism, so many things, because it's so much more than just the trees and the air and things like that. Those things are important, but we need to figure out and learn about how it impacts us mostly. So that was my transition. I mean, yes, I started off just learning about the regular, typical tree hugger things. It wasn't until I was exposed to another side of the environment, and that became environmental justice. And so that's kind of how I got into the swing of things.
So it was in undergrad, you were like, okay, I think I kind of want to do more environmental justice thing. So what made you go on to go and pursue an MPH and that being your route to learning more about the environment?
Of course. So I felt like, okay, I was in undergrad, I had this environmental piece of things, but I'm like, if I just graduated from undergrad and just with my environmental policy degree, all I feel like I was really knowledgeable of or could study was environmental issues or policy issues, but I wanted to have that education and knowledge to connect environmental issues to health. And so I thought the best way to do that was to go and get my master's degree. And then what ended up happening is I fell in love so much with this health aspect of it, but specifically the health equity and having access to health. So that's what really triggered me to go and get my master's. I said, well, I have this one thing, which was environmental issue, but I was lacking a little bit on the health side. So in order for me to even it out and put both pieces together, I decided to get my MPH.
Okay. So what was your concentration when you got your MPH? I know you went to Emory to go get your MPH. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I graduated from Emory in May of 2020. And so I had studied global health and I concentrated in community health and development. And I also got a certificate in water sanitation and hygiene. Mm-hmm. Oh, too many.
So I saw when you were at Emory, you did a internship in Cambodia with WaterAid. Please talk about that because I thought that was really cool.
Yes. Oh, WaterAid. It was such an enriching experience in all. And so I found out about the position through my program. They sent out applications. I applied. I explained specifically to the person who was interviewing me that I wanted to work on issues that had to do with access and equity. That's my thing. And that's if I'm going to do research, that's what I wanted to do. And so they had an equity and inclusion team. And so I worked directly with that team in leading research efforts to connect the gender and the gender equality sector to water sanitation and hygiene, because the and water sanitation and hygiene, for sure, I'll just say the word WASH. So the WASH sector had issues as far as women and girls having access to WASH and having this sanitary and hygiene resources so that they can practice safe WASH. And so they didn't know how to approach this topic because they were only knowledgeable about WASH related issues. And so my job was to connect the WASH sector with the gender equality sector. So I did lots of interviews with leaders in the WASH sector, the Ministry of Women, or leaders within the gender sector. So the Ministry of Women's Affairs, care International who worked specifically with girls and women, an organization called Plan and many others, to figure out, well, how can we merge both of these organizations together so that we are targeting and we are acknowledging women and girls who need WASH the most? So that was my experience there. Super amazing. Loved it. And Cambodia was awesome, as anyone could imagine. Yeah.
How long were you there for? Like, how long was this project?
So the project, actually, I got hired on in that December. I started my work in that February of 2019, but I was in Cambodia from May 2019 until August 2019. So about roughly 3 months.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was awesome.
So you have this experience and then it's time for you to graduate with your MPH. So did you know, like, okay, now that I'm about to graduate, I already know what I'm going to do next?
I thought I knew, but as we know, and as I'm sure you know,
yeah,
we plan things out, and I'm a planner, and yeah, I thought exactly what I was going to do. But I didn't, you know, obviously COVID also hit too. So things were chaotic, as you can imagine. I thought, what did I even think that I was going to do? I mean, I've changed my mind so many times. At one point, I thought I was going to go get a PhD.
Yeah.
Another point, I thought I was going to take a year travel. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I was actually, I worked at CDC the whole time while I was in grad school. And so luckily, my CDC position, I was able to be promoted into a fellow because I was working as a research assistant. But they generously allowed me to work as a fellow temporarily as I was looking for work.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was truly a blessing.
Yeah. How was your time working with the CDC? Did you do that throughout your MPH degree?
Yeah, I did. I started, as soon as I started school, I started working for CDC, and then I took that summer break when I was in Cambodia, and then mm-hmm. I turned around and worked for CDC my second year at Rollins, at Emory. And so it was really, really awesome. I will say, I never even thought that I would have worked for the CDC. I remember my first day at Emory, I'm like, oh, I want to work at CDC, but mm-hmm. I never actually thought that I would work there. So I was actually in the heart disease and stroke prevention division and had the most amazing mentors and supervisors. And so they gave me the opportunity to not just do like little work or little things. I was able to take on projects that were actually, I felt I was able to see through and work with even external partners. I was a part of a work group, the community health worker work group. So I was able to basically lead a whole internal agency-wide event, or the planning of that event, which ended up being really awesome. And I mean, still reflects on my resume today, which wow, I feel like has been really, really beneficial.
That's amazing. So when you got your MPH, and then now that you had your environmental policy degree, did you finally feel like, I think I know how I can intertwine both the environment and the justice side, since you received the more health training with the MPH?
Yeah, so I thought that I did. I was very selective in the courses that I was taking. I think it was very difficult because most people in our field, they want to do the research heavy survey methods, biostatistic courses and things like that. But yeah, that wasn't really where my passion was. And I felt a little bit sometimes like, oh, am I not doing the right thing because everyone else is taking these classes? But I wanted to take the classes that I thought would support the career goal that I wanted in the future. And so ultimately, I think that it really did help me. I remember a class that was called the Built Environment in Public Health. And so that was a class that was actually taught at Georgia Tech in collaboration with Emory. And so it connected all things I wanted to do in life, that environment and that health piece. And it actually led to my thesis, which ended up getting me the job that I have now. So I would definitely say my MPH really, really helped me. But I think sometimes I think like, oh, now I want to go get another degree because now my field is getting into, I know I'm crazy, I'm not going to, I'm in too much debt. But if it was free, I just might. But now I think sometimes like, oh, do I want to get an urban planning degree? Like, dang, I should have got an urban planning or like a
literally
business.
When you were explaining that, I was like, this sounds like urban planning.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, like I'm just so, my mind is so interdisciplinary. Like I should have just got like a degree in everything.
But the work that you do with environmental justice really goes, and when you think really deep, a lot of things is due to urban planning and how things are the way they are because of those planners. So let's go into your organization, the Millennials for Environmental Justice. What was your inspiration behind starting that organization?
Yeah, so I always knew that I wanted to start an organization. I always did. I love service. I love doing good in general. And so I felt like I wanted to start the organization because I wanted to be able to focus on environmental justice, but environmental issues like as a whole. Like, as you know, our four pillars are very, very broad and focus on very different things, but they're all interconnected. When we think about the environment, like you said, the environment can be your mental environment, your physical environment, literally everything around you, your work environment. And so I started M4EJ because I wanted to be a leader in, I want to be a leader in environmental justice. I want to be the person that people call to speak about these issues. And so I felt like this could help me get towards that, but also I'll be able to connect other people around our age to these issues because lots of people, lots of my friends, they're like, well, what is environmental justice? They're going to think the tree huggers, but even people in the environmental sector, they still think that, they still have that mentality. And so I think what I really wanted to do is I really want to be able to educate us on what environmental justice is and get us to be able to advocate for ourselves and advocate for our communities, because nobody else is going to do it for us. But if we educate ourselves on it, then we're able to take our concerns to the community leaders, take our concerns to the, you know, stakeholders and different things like that and see real life change. So that was kind of my inspiration behind starting the organization.
I love the idea behind Millennials for Environmental Justice. It has such a good mission. And I want to know, like, what is the goal of your organization? Other than what you kind of explained, but like, in terms of trajectory, what else do you see yourself doing within the organization?
Yeah, so I definitely see the organization really, really, really blooming. And actually, it has just in the past year. I remember first starting it in 2019 by myself, essentially, and just calling up maybe two friends. Hey, you want to do this with me? I know you you like this type of thing. So having that, and then what we were able to do is we established a full board. We have a board now. In this past summer, for the first time, we had six interns, six amazing interns who did so much work for us. So the fact that we were even able to have a whole summer internship experience, I think was awesome. And I know that COVID has been a crazy time for us, for everyone, but I think in a way it benefited us because all of our board and everyone who's ever like done any type of work with us has been based in many places across the U.S. And so that's to our benefit because virtual learning and virtual experiences are becoming more prominent. So it's not like a weird thing where they're like, oh, you don't have a headquarters, where are you based or things like that. It's like, no, we're a little bit everywhere. So people can work with us at any time or in whatever capacity. And so what I really see is for us to expand, and we're in the process of filing for 501c3 so that we can be tax exempt and file or and apply to different grant opportunities. And so once we get grant opportunities, we will first and foremost be able to do different type of organizational events or advocacy initiatives so that we can be a part of the change. Like, educating people and informing them via social media is definitely important, and we will continue that no matter what. But I think also having different programs where we can be able to see the change that we have and the impact in different communities is definitely one of our biggest goals. And essentially, at some point, have a staff, which is always very, very important. Our board can only do so much with the capacity that we have.
That's amazing. What initiatives have you guys done so far in like your year of being in an organization?
Yeah. So I'll just speak about a few of them, but one that we actually are just started this month, this past week, is our This is Gentrification campaign. And so what that is we actually, Miari Phillips, one of our interns, I let her lead that project almost entirely because we want our interns to get as much experience as they can. So she basically led that project. And so it is a digital magazine where people can go on and learn about what gentrification is, how it can impact their communities, what different types of gentrification there are, and how you can advocate for dismantling gentrification. So that's that campaign that's going on right now. Super awesome. We had a My Vote Matters campaign where we were just very active via social media. Every single day for the month of October, we had all of our board members go onto our social media and talk about why they're voting or why it's important or how they should vote. Mm-hmm. We've done so much. I don't want to talk about all of them. I don't want to keep you here all day.
Oh, no, it's fine.
So we had that. And then we also had one of our interns do kind of a segment on police brutality around the time in the summer with being so important. We had basically created a reform report of how police brutality impacts our everyday life. So what it has to do with food security and having access or being able to walk to a grocery store safely without running into the police, being able to enjoy your own community without police brutality, different things like that, and educating people. So we had that campaign as well. We also had one of our interns working on kind of an online course for students to educate them on what environmental justice is. And then we are also planning to implement another campaign soon, later next year, called Arts in the Streets of Justice, where we will have different artists creating different pieces of art to show either justice in their communities or injustice in their communities. And people can actually purchase this artwork, but we just want to be able to showcase what our communities look like in a diverse way, more in a more artistic, creative way.
That's amazing. So if somebody didn't know anything about environmental justice, whether it be your organization or just environmental justice in general, and they're listening to this, what would you say to them?
Yes, great question. I love when people ask what environmental justice is. So I would say, and actually I would start with, I like explaining what environmental injustice looks like. Okay. And so environmental injustice is basically not having the physical environment. So when we say physical environment, that goes to show, do you have a grocery store nearby that sells healthy foods that you can have access to? Is it affordable? Is it available? Is it accessible to you? So that could be an idea of physical environment. Do you have sidewalks in your neighborhood where you can safely walk to get to a park without fear of being ran over by a vehicle or something? Do you have street lights? What does the violence or the crime look like in your physical environment? Do you feel safe to take a walk around your block? But there's also your mental environment. And so that is just the feeling of whether or not you feel safe, whether or not you feel like you have a community that advocates for you and that is set up to help you thrive in your community. So that's your mental environment. And then also just thinking about what people are more familiar with, environment as far as just environmental substances. So air pollution, what are the air pollutions looking like in your neighborhood? Water, what's the water quality in your neighborhood? So thinking about those are the different questions that we kind of ask to figure out, what type of injustices are we exposed to in our environment? And so I would say environmental justice is the fair treatment of all communities as far as the physical, mental, whatever they define their environment as in making sure that we are not only thinking about equality, because equality only takes us so far, but taking an extra step of equity and making sure that we are prioritizing communities, those communities who are in need, communities of color, low income communities, Black and brown communities, making sure that we're taking the extra step to see that these communities are thriving, because we know that there's so many disparities between communities based off income, social class, whatever it may be.
Yes, beautifully said. So if somebody wanted to get involved in advocating for environmental justice, or just doing little things, quote unquote, little things that they feel like is like, I don't even know where to start, where would you tell them to start?
Yeah, so of course I'm going to plug our organization. Of course. You can, for one, you can follow us on, we are on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook at Millennials for EJ, or you can do Facebook Millennials for Environmental Justice. And we've actually just, I'm just saying this is the first time anyone's hearing this, but we've just, we have just created our resources page that has tons of resources on all of our pillars, on food security, environmental justice, urban planning, economic development. We have that on our website, and it's www.millennialsforej.com. So you can go there. And we also do have a Get Involved page as well, where we're going to be opening up positions for summer interns soon. We're still thinking about if we wanted to do spring interns, but we definitely will have summer internship program. We are always looking for grant writers if anyone wants to help with that. And then if anyone just wants to learn or educate people about environmental justice, I think that there are so many resources and also so many other organizations who are doing the same type of good things that we are doing. So I would definitely encourage people to not be afraid to post something that you wouldn't normally post, to educate people about environmental justice, because 9 times out of 10, people have not seen that content already. They don't know it. It's not clicking in their head. Yeah. And so I think that especially us millennials, or at least what I've noticed, we've been really active on social media as like social advocacy on just through social media. And so I think the time is now to, if you care about something, or if you care about something or you want others to care about it, I would say definitely go ahead and not be shy about it as far as posting it on your social media sites.
I totally agree with that. I want to ask, what have you learned about yourself during quarantine?
A lot. So I would say I've learned that, well, for one, that I need to practice more self-care and step away from the computer. Because I've been working from home since March. I'm very grateful for that. But I think it makes you want to be at the computer for 12 hours a day. And so I've learned that I need to step back a little bit. But I've also, I've also learned that I'm very proud of myself and the things that I've been doing, and being able to be focused, especially during a time like this, is not easy at all. So I will say that I am proud, but yeah, I've learned that I need to not stare at this computer screen all day.
That's very real. I feel like a lot of people are getting technology fatigue. If that's even
a thing. That's me. I have my blue light glasses I need to put on.
Oh yeah. So the final question I have is, what's next for you? It could be your organization, it could be you as a person. What's next for you?
Okay, next steps for me. So I would say, as far as M4EJ, our next steps are definitely to finish up that 501c3 status, so we can have that and start in just increasing our capacity in our work that we do, and filing for those grants and winning those grants, so that we can do some really cool work for the community. So I will say that, and to expand our team, which is what we're in the process of doing right now, if anyone is interested. But what I would say for me is, I really do want to focus. I will say especially in these next 5 years on M4EJ. I want that to be my thing. I love my current job right now so much, but I also love M4EJ, and I love being able to make the decisions on issues that I really care about. So I want to continue to do that, but I also want to have more opportunities like this to be able to speak on podcasts, to give more talks. I want to do a TED Talk one day. I want to talk to people about environmental justice, about these issues, and I want them to listen and feel entitled to care about it and to do something about it. So yeah, that's where I see myself at, and to do some more traveling.
Well, I hope one day you'll be able to get that TED Talk in and go and speak at schools and basically promote environmental justice for all. Thank you so much for being on this podcast. Again, please plug yourself on your socials and then like M4EJ socials again. I'll put everything in the show notes, but you can do it again.
Okay, perfect. Yes. So if you would like to get in contact with us, get involved in any type of way, please follow us on all of our social medias. We are on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever else at Millennials4. It's the number 4EJ. And you can also visit our website at www.millennials4ej.com. And if you would like to keep up with me as well on my Twitter, my professional Twitter is Diamond Spratt, which I'll have you all send out that information as well. And then my Instagram, Diamond Sierra.
Yes. Thank you so much for being on this podcast. Y'all, me and Diamond actually went to high school together, but FHS alum.
Don't say that too loud.
But you know, we out now. Exactly. Thank y'all so much for listening. Please follow me on Instagram at UnorthodoxRail. Please remember to rate on Apple Podcasts, follow on Spotify, and I'll catch you in the next one. Bye.